We're going to end the homily today. I'm going to end the homily with another meditation, so I'm going to we'll start with a short one, just to kind of warm up. So today I wanted to talk about growth or new things. And much like spring brings forth new growth after a long winter, this moment of emergence after the initial waves of the coronavirus pandemic presents opportunities for something new for us as a church and as individuals. Our old patterns have been disrupted and broken. The ground is prepared for new growth. At our annual meeting in December, we endorsed a new vision for our church, and I'll read it now. We envision the UU Church of Meadville as a dynamic organization that is guided by the six sources of Unitarian Universalism and that supports the spiritual health of Meadville and the surrounding area through programs that nurture participants' relationships with the sacred, within themselves, within each other, and within the natural world. Recognizing that we do not have sufficient resources to grow and deepen the impact of our programs on our own, we propose to accomplish this vision in partnership with other groups in our region. The parish board has taken that charge seriously. In late January, we created two teams that were tasked with reaching out to potential partners to find out which organizations might be interested in working with us and which opportunities to support our community's health and well-being would be the best fit for our combined skills and resources. Each team is looking at these questions in the context of one of our two buildings, either the parish house or the sanctuary. The team exploring the potential of the parish house has completed its work, and I'll summarize their findings for you this morning. I expect we'll hear from the team focused on the sanctuary later this year. Just for context, the team considering the parish house had five members: Corrine Chafee, Bruce Harlan, who provided a voice and perspective from outside the church, and three board members: Deb Lehman, Mark McGinty, and me. Our survey of organizations was broad-based. We interviewed representatives from the city, including the mayor, the assistant city manager, and members of city council. We spoke with some of Allegheny's community engagement staff. We met with representatives from the MLK Scholarship Program, from CHAPS, Creating Landscapes, the Meadville Neighborhood Center, the Center for Family Services, Crawford County United, Women's Services, Crawford County Drug and Alcohol, the Northwest Pennsylvania Chapter of Not One More, the Meadville Climate Action Task Force, the Meadville Public Library, the YMCA, and then a number of other interested and interesting individuals. It was a lot of fun. I had really enjoyed doing it. We didn't all speak to all those people. We split it up. And the people we met with were really enthusiastic about and interested in what we're trying to do. And it's clear there's a lot of interest in the community right now, about building our community as we come out of the pandemic. Many organizations find themselves in a similar situation as the church, where what that was happening before isn't quite working now, and it's not quite clear what the path forward is. So it's a time, I think, of new growth, new opportunities. And I think we'll see a lot of new developments in our community over the next little while, not just here, but elsewhere. And one of the things it's clear we'll need to do is really to be careful to maintain ties with these other groups so that we can use our resources wisely, not duplicate efforts, and really make sure that we're addressing the needs as best as possible given the resources we have. We spoke with people about all kinds of programs and things that we might do out of the parish house, but really the things that came up again and again, there's really broad agreement around the need for programs to address the needs of youth in our community and families. There, in particular, there's a need for programs that provide youth assistance with homework after school and healthy alternatives to hanging out on the streets or being home alone without adult supervision. For programs that support economically disadvantaged parents as well as young adults who are transitioning to independent living. Such programs could include community building activities or opportunities to develop skills such as managing a household, parenting, budgeting, nutrition and meal planning, cooking, finding and keeping work. There's a need for programs that support people who have lost loved ones or otherwise been impacted by opioid or other addictions. There's a need for programs that build community and create connections. Many of us have become isolated, and it's become normal in our lives. And so there's a need for us really. That was true before the pandemic. It's even more true now. And so there's really a need for programs that bring people together, especially across divisions, creating connections across diverse groups. The other thing that came up, and I was glad that we were doing this process of exploration because it came up in almost every conversation, was the need for training opportunities to help prepare volunteers and paraprofessionals to be able to support the activities we imagine, right? Because there are plenty of people who would like to help, but they don't know how. They don't know what to do. As we're doing this, we want to actually be helpful, right? So, and it helps to have some training to make that work. So there's a lot to think about. In this moment, as of today, it appears that Creating Landscapes and the YMCA are the two groups that are most willing and able to partner with us to provide programs to meet some of the needs we've identified. I had a really great conversation with the new director of the public library, who's also super interested in collaborating on programs to support youth. And as he settles into his new role, I expect opportunities for collaboration will arise there as well. If you haven't met him, he's terrific. He's only been in the job like a month, so you know, give him a little bit of time. He's young and enthusiastic, so it's great. Looking forward, there's a lot actually happening already, and we've realized, we talked about this at the board at our last meeting. We haven't actually told anybody what we're doing and what's going on. So I thought I'd give you a little summary, right, today. So looking forward, we just agreed this week, finalized an agreement with the Y to provide space for summer programming for youth starting in mid-June. The summer program, the Y does a summer program every summer. It's based out of their facility, which is the other side of the parish house, right next door. And they'll be bringing groups of kids over for an hour or so at a time to engage in quiet activities. They wanted a place that was quiet where they could go and read or play board games, do other kind of quiet activities in their day, just to change the pace. And so they'll be using an Arthur room for that work. We also expect to continue hosting Creating Landscapes Early Learning Center, the preschool that's been a resident with us for several years now. So that will continue, we expect, next year. And I was, in May, I'm really excited to report that I'll be meeting with representatives from Creating Landscapes and the Y to talk about how the three groups, the Y, Creating Landscapes, and the church, could collaborate to provide after-school programming and restart Creating Landscapes for families in the fall. That was a good program, very effective here, and there seems to be a lot of ways that we could work together to strengthen that. And of course, AA will continue to meet in our space daily, at least I think so, that's what I've heard. So they seem to really like meeting in our space, and so we want to continue to provide that for them. This feels like, to me, just the start. But what I see even in next year is there'll be a lot more, as things are going, there'll be a lot more activity in the parish house, and we'll be doing a lot more to support our community in really rich ways, and I'm pretty excited about that. Some of you will have realized that this raises questions about what are we going to do about the parish house, which you know needs some work, right? So, for example, the parlor is totally unusable. I mean, no one should go in there. I mean, it's at that state. So one of the questions had been, do we need to reconfigure that? Do we need to create a large room for dinners and things like that, or what do we need? And what's one of the things that's clear after spending time talking to community groups is there are spaces to have large gatherings. And I think I was just thinking about it and preparing for this. On this same block, St. Bridget's has a beautiful parish building, right? And they're essentially closing that facility. I don't know what'll happen to that, but they've combined the three churches, Catholic churches in Meadville, into one, and they meet in St. Agatha, and I don't know that much is happening. And I know they play bridge once a week because it was in the Meadville Tribune this week. But other than that, I don't know what they do with it. They've got a really beautiful facility there. So what we think seems most needed are meeting rooms that hold 25 to 50 people. So we will be bringing a proposal to keep the same configuration that we currently have. So that should be coming sometime soon. And we'd like to really get started on the work, but we're still waiting on the engineering assessment, which we've talked with you about in December. It's now promised to be to us by the end of May. We'll see. We do know that the floors need some additional support in the parish shelter, a few places where there's some structural issues that need to be attended to. It's not dangerous, but it's something that should be attended to. I can show you during coffee hour if you're curious what we're seeing. And we want to be sure there aren't any other things like that that should be addressed before we do finish work. The last thing we want to do is do a bunch of finish work and then tear it all off so that we can fix stuff that we should have known about. So that's why we're waiting. The one thing that I think when we brought up, we talked about, we have this facility that we'd like to use more effectively. The one thing that really brought, in the conversations I had, brought light into people's eyes that really got them excited, they say, oh, you have a kitchen? Right? They were very excited to know that they might do things that, for example, the director at the Y has started a program with a few of the youth that, or the Y at the public library, with a few of the youth that come regularly to public library, and they're growing some vegetables, and he'd love to cook something, but he doesn't have any place to do that. Like, he'd like them to have that experience of cooking, and so that might be something we could partner with the public library to do. But there's, the kitchen needs a little of love as well, as you might know. So we're now working on developing a proposal for that, and we hope to have that to you very soon. That's actually going fairly quickly. One of the things that's sorely needed is a vent hood and fire suppression system over the stove. If we're going to have a commercial kitchen or something, anything like that, you have to have, there's no venting in that room, right, which is not ideal for a kitchen. And certainly there's a fire suppression system would be good to have. And there are a number of other things that we're looking at, new flooring, new paint, some reconfiguration of the dishwashing area to make it up, bring it up to code, some new work tables, a few other odds and ends. So we're working with a consultant to develop a proposal for that, and we'll bring that back to you at some point, so stay tuned. And there are a few other things happening. In March, a couple of board members worked with Ian Carbone, who's a faculty member in environmental science at the college, who studies solar power. And together we submitted a grant proposal to fund a solar array for the church. We're hopeful, I'm actually pretty hopeful about this. There's this particular agency, it's actually funded by First Energy, the parent of Penelec, and this particular agency has been giving a lot of grants recently, and I talked to the program officer on Friday. She did a site visit, and I got some sense that this might be something that would come to fruition, so I'm very hopeful about it. If it does happen, the array would be installed in the fall on the flat roof over the kitchen and above part of the Arthur room, so it won't actually be visible from the ground. So I can explain to you what that's going to look like if you're curious. It should reduce our electric bills by at least $800 annually, which would be welcome. And of course, more importantly, for our planet, for our community, it will help us reduce our carbon footprint. Ian's class is also conducting an energy audit. It seemed like a good time to do that at both buildings, this and the other, to help us understand if we're doing renovations or refurbishing, are there things we could do at the same time that would help us create a more sustainable spaces? And we're also thinking about storage. You know, we're doing all the really exciting stuff right now. So Deb and I have been talking a lot about storage. As you know, the stage at the end of the Arthur Room tends to be a storage because we don't use it as a stage. So we'd like to make a closet out of that. So we're looking for proposals to make a closet there that could secure some of those things that should be more better secured, certainly be more aesthetically pleasing than what we have now. And I think we could use that space more efficiently. So we're just getting estimates for that now. So, and ideally, we'd have it done before the Y starts their summer program in June. That might be a little tight. You know, there's only, especially given the way contracting is going right now, if anybody's trying to get any work done, you know what I'm talking about. So let's see, did I miss anything? I think that's all for now, right? There's more coming, I think. There's a lot happening. I guess that's what I want you to know. So part of it is, part of this is just a reporting to you to let you know there's a lot happening, and it's a time of real opportunity and growth for the church. I'm very excited about what the future holds. But I also want us to remember, it's not just organizations like the church or the Y or the public library or others that are emerging from the pandemic. No matter who you are, no matter what your role in life, where you've been, what your experience has been, all of our lives were turned upside down by COVID. Many of us have experienced other life-changing events in the past 2 years, some of which we haven't even been able to share with others as much as we'd like because of the separation enforced by COVID and the policies around that. As just one example for myself, I retired a year ago. And that was already a, that's been a much more life-changing event than I realized. And it's been harder to adjust to than I thought it would be. So combining that with thinking about coming out of COVID, I've been thinking about, like, for me, I've been really spending some time thinking about, how do I want to engage with the world? What am I going to do with myself now? Like, Carol and I got really used to never going anywhere, right? So is that how I want to spend the rest of my life, right? That's a question that's to ask, because we didn't go out to eat. We were home all the time. You know, for a while, the only time I went out once a week to the grocery store for like a year, right? That was, you know, that was my entire time out of the house, other than that and walking either by myself or with Carol, right? So it was, is that what I want going forward? So Sandra Bernard, who many of you know, was my teacher at the Full Spectrum Center. One of the questions she often often asked us to consider is, what's needed now? And I think that's a really good question to sit with, because it's not always the same. What was needed 10 minutes ago, a year ago, 2 years ago, is not necessarily what's needed now. And what's needed now might change in 10 minutes or a month or a year. So we need to continue to ask ourselves, what's needed now in this moment? And one of the other things that Sandra always encouraged us to do is to follow the energy. Right? So, which is hard for, I'll put it this way. It took me about 2 years to figure out what she was talking about, and I was in workshops with her like whole weekends, like many times a year. And what does she mean? So, a good place to start is to really get in touch with what's happening inside yourself, inside your body, not in your head, in your body, right? And research actually really supports this approach. I was doing some reading this week, and there's studies that have been published in the last few years that have found, for example, that traders on the floor of the stock exchange who are more aware of their bodily sensations are much more profitable traders, and they last longer in the profession than traders who are unaware of their internal states. We're not talking about what they're thinking, but they're feeling, their felt sensation in their bodies. Turns out there's something to gut instinct. In fact, research has found that the ability to perceive one's internal physical sensations is more important to success on the trading floor than one's analytic abilities. No matter how fancy a trader's Ivy League training, if that's all they bring to the table, they will not be as successful as traders with less advanced training who can incorporate their physical experience into their decisions. In my own experiences of meetings and my work with other people, and I went to a lot of meetings in my role at the college. It seemed like all I did many days. I've found that attending to my inner experience, what's happening in my chest or in my abdomen, is much more important than just listening to the words. In fact, a lot of times when I really thought about it, the words didn't make any sense, right? But if I sat with it and I could, so if I really paid attention, if I only listened to the words, I couldn't figure out what was going on. But if I sat with what I was feeling and held the words and that feeling together, Good things could come from that. It helped me answer the question in that moment, what's needed now? Carol and I are also working with a Quaker group right now on it's a couples enrichment experience that we're doing that really encourages us to listen deeply to one another. But one of the questions that the Quakers always ask, which has taken me a while, I mean, everybody else in the program is Quaker, so you know, I spend a lot of time with Quakers. But it comes up all the time is they never talk about what should you do? What should I do? They try not to talk about shoulds. They ask, so what are you called to do? Right? Which is not anything about should. And what I'm called to do might not be what you're called to do. So it's a related question. It's also a really important question, both for us individually and for the church. What are you called to do? What is unique? Because your calling is unique to you. No one can tell you what it is. So I'd like to take a moment and see if we can sit with those questions. And I'd like us to not think about them. I'd like us to feel into them. So I'll ask you to take a moment and put your feet flat on the floor. Close your eyes if you're comfortable doing so. And let's see if we can feel into those questions. We'll take I'll provide a little guidance to help us kind of tune into what's happening in our bodies. And then we'll come back to the questions. So let's just start by relaxing your hands, your feet. Just letting ourselves sit gently in our seats. And pay attention to our breath. Feel your breath as it enters through your airway, descends to your lungs, and then releases again. Follow the flow in and out. Now see if you can sense the beating of your heart. Can you count the beats? Now let your awareness descend into your abdomen. What sensations do you find there as you sit, as you breathe? How are these sensations moving within you? Listening to our bodies often brings awareness of an array of feelings, most of which are transient. As you attend to your body, what feelings arise? Perhaps you feel calm in one moment and anxious in the next. Perhaps calm again. Perhaps gratitude. Or sorrow. Don't hold on to the feelings in their natural state. Feelings are fluid, one flowing to the next. Notice them. Allow them to emerge, to blossom, and then pass. Now contemplate your recent experience, maybe of this morning, or something you did yesterday, or this past week. Reflect on a few individual activities, perhaps caring for other people or animals, eating a meal, yard work, sharing a cup of coffee with someone, helping a friend. What sensations arise as you contemplate each moment? Now sit with the questions. What is needed now? Now in this moment? What are you uniquely called to do? Just breathe and hold those questions. I'll ring the bell in a few minutes to bring us back. Thank you for sharing that exploration with me. In a moment, we'll collect this morning's offering. But before we do that, I'd like you to take another moment. And let's just appreciate what a beautiful day it is and what a joy it is to be here together. It's really delightful to share this time and place with you. So now you'll have an opportunity to, we have an opportunity.